Blog Talk Radio.
When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Now, you must remember, the enemy has only images and illusions behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image, and he will break the enemy.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. We're back once again, our midweek review show. Once again, our midweek review show, folks. August 1st, 2012. Boy, is this year moving along so quickly. We have a lot to get into, folks. This is a fully packed show, 90 minutes of pleasure, funk, and expression, as well as intellectualism. So we're going to give you what we have. Before we get into the funk, well, let me rephrase that. Before we get into the discourse, let's get into, well, I'm not going to call this funk. This is a classic rock jam, classic rock, classic blues. This is I Put a Spell on You, shutting out the Oracle. I put a spell on you by Screaming Jay Hawkins. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
He was a bit of a kook, wasn't he? Screaming Jay Hawkins. Listen, folks, we're back in full effect. The captain is somewhere. I may have to, you know what, the captain dropped off. So we'll bring him in momentarily. I guess you may have to call back again, folks. Welcome to the Midweek in Review show, the Midweek in Review show of Afternoon Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot of things to get into this evening. Let me just go down the line quickly. We are going to talk about Driving While Black. Driving While Black. Or DWB, which is, I guess, a riff of DWI. But DWB has been bandied about for a number of years now. And former CNN host and now new BET host, T.J. Holmes, has put out a claim via Twitter. Everyone tweets nowadays via Twitter that he was a victim of DWB. Oh, I see the captain has returned. Let me give him his appropriate intro. We need the captain on the bridge. The captain is needed on the bridge.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new...
Captain, sir,
thank you.
Are you with us?
Thank you. You changed around the intro, so you somewhat, you know, threw me off. How do you read me?
you're being read fine, sir. You're a little, to our audience, my co-host is in transit, but... Yeah, we can hear you a bit. If we get
all
some
right,
background noise, Captain, we'll have to, you know, we have to mute you. But right now, you sign okay.
All right. This is what I just want to say briefly, really quick. All right. For the audience, check out the new 007 trailer. It looks excellent. All right. I'm not saying it's going to be an event as of yet, because, you know, I don't put all that energy out there only for certain movies. The other thing you have to check out also too, check out my boy RZA in the upcoming movie. Check out the trailer, The Man with the Iron Fist. He managed to do a movie he's directing with Russell Crowe, the great Russell Crowe. This is no lie. This is RZA from the Wu-Tang, ladies and gentlemen. Wu-Tang. Just a little food for thought. Just check it out. All right, so Afro, let's get the show started.
Yes, I was just getting into the lineup of topics, sir. I mentioned behind the scenes we're going to talk about T.J. Holmes' experience regarding Driving While Black in Atlanta. He's a successful young man, successful broadcaster, and he was driving. We don't know what he was driving, and we'll get into that. He was driving a luxury vehicle and was pulled over by the police. No kind of violence occurred. But nevertheless, he felt that there was something else going on. He felt he was profiled incorrectly. And folks, by the way, I put out some feelers toward Mr. Holmes. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully we'll get him on the show so he can expound on his experience. But we will talk about what we know thus far on the show. Also, psychologists, because we just don't do – folks, you know, we do not just do a blackety-black-black show. We're going to talk about all kinds of things that affect everyone. So in this case, I thought it was pretty interesting. Psychologists have figured out why disfigured people are oftentimes shunned by their cohorts, by their peers. Why is it a natural reaction? You know, we one would think, Captain, that we are more evolved than this. But that natural reaction, that natural ability to recoil when we see someone, when we see another human being through some misfortune or accident who happens to be disfigured, we have this thing about us as humans to recoil, to shun, which doesn't make any sense, but according to psychologists, it does make sense. So we'll talk about that. Also, a HuffPost, as in Huffington Post, a HuffPost piece suggests that Governor Romney recently, during his visit overseas, specifically his visit to Israel, he played the quote-unquote race card while discussing Israeli success versus Palestinian blight. Israeli success versus Palestinian blight. He, according to the blogger, he played the race card. A young man was recently kicked off an airline flight for wearing saggy pants. I know that's not necessarily shocking. We've heard these stories before, but he was somewhat belligerent, somewhat verbally abusive. I guess that's supposed to be shocking too, Captain. I'm actually shocked that a person wearing that type of garb would be abusive. And, oh, yeah, one more thing. Racism, stupidity make strange bedfellows on Twitter. Let me repeat that. Racism and stupidity make strange but appropriate bedfellows on Twitter. And I'm referencing the Olympics. A young woman tweeted out something disparaging toward Africans, and now she's out of there. And I think she's just one of two. I think another person tweeted out something, I believe it might have been something untoward Asian folk. These folks on Twitter. I mean, I'm going to expound on this more, Captain, even beyond the racism argument. Just this deal with Twitter, it's like a direct pipeline to the brain, which I find just reprehensible, how people are just so comfortable in giving us their most intimate thoughts, their most racist, vile thoughts, and spewing them with ease via Twitter. So we have to talk about this. All right, Captain, I want to talk about T.J. Holmes. I really do hope we're able to get this young gentleman on the show. I think it'll be interesting because we unpack this behind the scenes ourselves. And actually, I think we did speak about it. But I spoke to several people about this, and I'm not sure what to think regarding the Holmes incident. So I'm going to find this clip. It's on from MSNBC. Michael Dyson was standing in for the Ed Schultz show, so he was the host. I guess his edutainment experience, is working for him. So I want to play this clip of the interview, brief interview between Mr. Holmes and Dr. Dyson, and we'll let him speak for himself, and then we will unpack it. Here's T.J. Holmes on DWB. Hold on, folks.
I have asserted a firm conviction, a conviction rooted in my faith in God and my faith in the American people, that working together, we can move beyond some of our old racial wounds, and that, in fact, we have no choice. We have no choice if we are to continue on the path of a more perfect union.
Let's turn to T.J. Holmes, the host of BET's upcoming show, Don't Sleep, which launches on October the 1st. T.J., welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening. Good to see you, Dyson. Didn't expect to be talking to you like this, and kind of a reluctant guest in some ways. I didn't expect to be here just documenting my experience, which I know, as you mentioned, so many other young men went through probably just today.
Well, that's all right, my friend. I appreciate you as a very public person coming on here to explain this, because millions of people around the world watch you, and we want you to help us understand this. So explain what happened during your traffic stop today.
Well, I literally was 1.5 miles from my driveway. Officer had been following me for at least a mile, maybe even a couple, and he was following closely. Knew something was up. I anticipated his lights coming on. Sure enough, they did. I pulled over and do what I always do, which some people find crazy. I stick my arms out the window and cross my hands like this so that the officer sees my hands.
Right.
That's just something literally.
You do
my
that because you're a black man. You want him to think that you have a gun or anything.
All right. There you go. I don't want that officer nervous when he walks up to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, the only thing he asked for, and I asked specifically several times, why was I stopped? And he said, I want to make sure you have insurance on the car. He even asked me for a bill of sale for the car. Now,
what kind of car is it? Tell us what kind of car
it is. Well, you know what? A couple things on that. I purposely didn't say what kind of car it was because I didn't think it should matter. If I was in a 2012 BMW or 89 Pinto, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
But the other part of that is that what difference does it make what kind of car that I was in? So I purposely didn't put that out. I might talk about that later, but right now I didn't think it should matter. But I went on with him, and he wasn't rude or anything necessarily, but he didn't have a reason for pulling me over, and I was. I was frustrated at the time, Dyson, and I tweeted about it, and I was frustrated at the time, but then all day today I have wondered if maybe I made a mistake and if I did something wrong by inflaming people's emotions, because by using that phrase, driving while black, and putting that out immediately, there were two sides clearly polarized on the issue. One side, mothers, fathers, young black men who have gone through this experience or had someone go through it.
Right.
And then another side that called me a racist. The N-word's been thrown around today, been called other names, saying, there you go, using the race card. And this, you talk about post-racial country, well, we can't have a conversation about race ever, because this is it happens every single time. We go to our corners, we come out, we fight for a round, beat the crap out of each other, and go back to our corners and get ready to fight again, and nothing ever gets done.
We got 30 seconds left. You're expert at this. You're a journalist. Yeah. In 30 seconds, what's the nub of the matter? What do we learn from this?
What we learn is hopefully, and the reason I'm talking to you today is because there was another young man that got stopped today that didn't have several attorneys in his contact list that he could call. He didn't have an attorney that he could go to and say, hey, I'd like to file a complaint, which I did do today with that police department. But I want to start this conversation, continue this conversation, put a face and a name on it, make it real. I'm not naming the officer. I'm not naming the police department just yet, because I want to go to them and try to make an improvement in my local community before I just put them on blast. So hopefully having this conversation, putting my name and face on it, gets it out there and makes it more real to some people. But honestly,
right,
Dyson, it happened to a lot of people who are not going to have a voice.
TJ Truth and Justice Holmes, thank you so much, my friend.
All right, folks, once again, that was Dr. Michael Eric Dyson filling in for Ed Schultz on the Ed Schultz program on MSNBC, conversing with former CNN correspondent and now new BET host, T.J. Holmes. Holmes is an affable young man of color. I liked seeing him on CNN, and as well as, first of all, I like seeing many folks of color at those outfits. So I don't have, I like what he represents. I like his comportment, so I have no problems with that. But, folks, I see the captain has dropped out again. Captain, you got to call back in. Call back in, Captain. Anyway, while we wait for the captain, I'm going to give you my opinion on what's going on here. I have been stopped by the police while driving. Not often, for the sake of full disclosure, I have not been pulled over by the police really, really infrequently. In my life, maybe three times, maybe three or four times the most in my lifetime. I see the captain's return. Let me just check. Captain, are you there?
Yes, the captain's here.
Okay. All right. Cap, hold on one second. I'm just going on about this T.J. Holmes thing. Hold on one moment. Okay. So, folks, as I was stating to our audience, I've been pulled over maybe three or four times, and I will confess that I might have been somewhat indignant years ago. Now, not so much. I have friends who are police officers. I have friends that are retired cops. And some of the stories that they told me, you really have to have some level of empathy for what they have to deal with. I mean, you literally can approach somebody and lose your life in a passing glance. In a moment, you can lose your life. And I think that has to be acknowledged as to the level of difficulty that job entails. That must be understood. And I'm of the belief that I'm aware that the police officers do have a certain level of leniency, more or less, or a certain level of leeway in pulling someone over under suspicion. They have that wherewithal to pull someone over. I mean, it does not have to necessarily be something so specific. I think that many folks of color believe you have to have an absolute reason to pull someone over. If there's a level of suspicion, and that's very subjective. I will say this, I will say that right out. It is very subjective. Now, I don't think in this case with Mr. Holmes, it appears that it might have been something else going on here, because he said, if you're going to believe his story, he said that he was pulled over, and then, you know, he was asked about his insurance to see if he had insurance, and then he was asked for a bill of sale on the car. I mean, that's extra. It is extra. But this is part of the shrapnel that I go on and on about, that we don't want to realize that this shrapnel is going to affect even the black person who is upstanding, who is not a criminal, hardworking, that whole thing. This man was about a mile away, as he stated himself, a mile away from his home, from his residence, and there really was no apparent reason to be pulled over. But at the same time, if that cop has a reasonable suspicion, if he gets some kind of profile that you look like someone that was reported, he has to act on that. We're not living in the age of Professor X or Jean Grey, referencing Marvel Comics. These people are not mind readers. If you're not a mind reader, there's some level of profiling that is required. I'm going to go deeper into this. I want to give the captain his due, of course. But I will expound on this whole deal of profiling. I don't think that exclusionary racial profiling is correct. You just can't be a black person and then that's the end of the conversation and get accosted or pulled over. However, there is some kind of balancing act that the police officer has to deal with, and a balancing act that the person of color, whether he or she be brown or black or Asian or what have you, or anyone who fits a profile, if you want to go beyond even race, there's a balancing act with both parties as to how to conduct themselves and the level of comportment and the level of honesty as to why a person is being pulled over. So I'm going to let the captain come on in with his opinion. Captain, what are your thoughts on Mr. Holmes being pulled over?
All right. First of all, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. All right. From a statistical analysis standpoint, black people and brown people, regardless of whatever car they drive, are pulled over more than anybody else here in America. Now, I know people hate when I say that, but you can look up those stats. That's the truth, and that's what it is. Now, I think the axing of the bill of sales is a bit out of pocket, because typically officers, when they pull you over, for whatever reason that they have, okay, for pulling you over, a lot of times it's legitimate, sometimes it's not. But there's a big gray area in there, as police officers go. But I think asking for the bill of sales is totally out of pocket. Normally what they do is license, registration, and insurance. You're not typically going to have the bill of sales on you for your vehicle, okay, according to his story anyway. Now, as far as me being pulled over, I've probably been pulled over a good 20 times in my lifetime, all right? I do definitely have a harder look. I've been muscular most of life, okay? So that probably does play into it. And some of the cars that I were in at the given time. My friend, many years ago in the college years, had a red Mustang. Automatically, you don't even see people driving red cars so much anymore now because the insurance is higher. And also, cops do pull you over more. Automatically, in a red car, we used to get pulled over all the time. Now, I can remember also a friend of the show, Hilton Ruiz. You know Hilton Ruiz very well. He had the Mazda Millennium back in 1996. It's a $40,000 car going back in 1996. It looked like a drug dealer's type of car. You have a Latin person and a black person. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Regular basis, getting pulled over. Everything correct, though. But that's the reality of it. Certain cars will automatically attract the police because they assume, you know, you might be dealing drugs, and that's the only way you can have a car like that. We were either, at this given time, either we were working or we were going to school or something, that type of thing going on. No one was dealing drugs, All right? And we bring it into modern day. I've also been pulled over by the police driving various cars. No one has ever asked me for the bill of sales. You know, and that's the reality of the situation. So blacks, I'm saying this is how they say it, blacks. Blacks and browns, all right, are typically pulled over based on statistical analysis more than the rest of the population. That's just what it is. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. That's just based on statistical analysis. The bill of sales, to me, part, if this is truly what happened, this is his story now, I think that's crazy, the bill of sales aspect. But a police officer can pull you over because there is a gray area. They can pull you through. And that's the reality of the situation. Back over to you, Sir Afflinger.
Now, something else, again, folks, we're talking about driving while black. There was an incident with former CNN host, now the upcoming BET host, T.J. Holmes, professional black man, I believe he's around 36, 37 years of age, so he's a relatively young guy, and a expensive, I would gather, it was an expensive luxury vehicle in Atlanta. And it's another thing, too, we spoke about this before, Captain. Atlanta has a burgeoning black middle class, burgeoning black upper middle class. So it's not as if there aren't moneyed black people, especially in Atlanta, rolling around with expensive vehicles. So it really should have been a shocker to the police officer as to this young man driving the vehicle that he was. And the guy makes some pretty good shekels, as they say. He makes a good living. So why can't he drive the vehicle he's driving? But at the same time, you said something interesting about the amount, statistically, the amount of pullovers and stops, especially behind vehicles, that African-American men and Latino men, statistically, why they're being stopped so much. That has to correspond, rightly or wrongly, Captain, that corresponds with the disproportionate amount of crime that has been attributed to the minority communities. That's what it is. Now, I would feel more comfortable in arguing the matter if the crime rates were really, really low and then this was going on. But you can't – there's a term called the okey-doke, Captain. We cannot continuously go for the quote-unquote okey-doke with – being the victim in these circumstances or playing the victim in these circumstances and not being honest about the fodder that we give, if we're going to be tribal, the fodder that we give law enforcement, the majority community, mainstream community, the fodder that some of us are giving, statistically, that gives them the ammunition to say, well, I have to pull you over because, quote unquote, your kind. Because, hey, we use the brother and sister thing, Captain. Your kind have been attributed to committing XYZ level of crime. It's not right. And one thing, if we get Holmes on the show, I'm going to ask him, you know, is this more about indignation because of the stature you maintain, because of your status, that perhaps this police officer didn't use the level of discernment? Because that's what I would want. I would want the police officer to have a certain level of discernment when dealing with a black or brown person or anyone. I see right now we're talking specifically about black and brown folks, but everyone should be scrutinized and there should be a level of fair discernment. Now, friend of the show, Sergio Mims from Chi-Town, and he knows the block is hot out there. The block is blazing in Chicago. And he says, rather jokingly, he says, believe it or not, never once have I been pulled over by the police. When I told that to my friends, they say it's because I'm too doofus looking. I met Mr. Mims on several occasions. I wouldn't say that he's doofus looking, but he has the look of someone that is non-threatening. You know, I have – someone said that I have a non-threatening look. I just have a non-threatening look. Some of us, Captain, play on the threatening look. So if you have your hat pulled to the side, if you have double earrings, if you're driving a black mobile or brown mobile, and you know what I mean by that, a vehicle that
if no one is in it, they might be able with some level of accuracy to know the ethnicity or the race of the person that's driving it. If you're driving one of these stereotypical vehicles, expect to be pulled over. My thing is, and this is something that we talk about at AfroNerd incessantly, try not to fit the profile. Now, in the case of Mr. Holmes, I know he has a professional look, demeanor, and comportment on air. I don't know what he looked like off air. I'm assuming he most likely, he's an educated man, professional. I would assume that he probably had, even if he was casually dressed, I'm assuming he had a fairly moderate look while driving this vehicle. Doesn't have to be the case. This cop might have had a personal animus toward a black person of wealth, a professional black person, and he just didn't like it. I mean, that's the world we live in. It doesn't mean that it's fair. I'm not condoning it, but we're going to have to get into this deeply, more deeply, when we have the gentleman on, because I think there's more to it. And I want him to understand, or at least to be honest with us, and I think he will, as you know, where's the leeway, or do we give the leeway for the police to profile people correctly? See, some say use terms like, I'm against profiling. No. If we cannot read your mind, the only way that police are able to do their job is by employing a certain level of profiling. I just don't think it should be exclusionary racial profiling. You just can't be a black or brown Latin person. You just cannot be that, and that's the end of the day. That means you could stop anybody. So, folks, we're going to go to the next topic. Before that, let's go to a quick musical break. This is a mashup, one of my favorite mashups, between Eric B. and Rakim and Kaminsky. Excuse me. Eric B. and Rakim and Kaminsky, Soul Exploration. Let's groove. We'll be back in a few moments.
As the beginning, really, of an exploration. That's the reason we're exploring. You don't know what you'll run into on an exploration. What the sky looks like, what the stars look like. Do they still twinkle, or are they a steady light when you get outside the atmosphere?
Exploration. You want an X, then you gotta have soul. Okay, folks, we're back. That was Kaminsky with Eric B. and Rakim, a special mashup. That is Soul Exploration, always trying to give you the best in urban alternative listening. Funk, jazz, the good stuff. The stuff that the Minstrels refuse to play. All right, folks, once again, Afner featuring Captain Kirk. Captain is in transit. He's on a cell phone, I believe, but nevertheless, we can hear him clearly. We always appreciate his intelligence and his addition to the program. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, it's 646-915-9620. Transition time. I always try to, well, I should say I, it's we always try to give you not just information affecting or afflicting black and brown people, but we also try to give you information just for the sake of information, science, technology, video gaming, you name it. I mean, the show is called Afro Nerd, so we're going to give you things that are not just the stereotype. One thing I used to people of color, of course, it's great for it to be cultural, to highlight black culture. That's important. But not every show that has a black person at the helm should focus on everything being black. I think it's important that the public understands that we live in America, which means you go to restaurants, you go to movies. I can talk about Batman. I can talk about The Dark Knight. I can talk about the comic convention. I can talk about anything as a human being, and I do not feel comfortable in just promulgating this sense of, well, I only know black things. I know a lot of things. I can talk about Led Zeppelin. I could talk about anything you could think of, not just color coding the information based on my ethnicity. So having said that, I briefly mentioned this to the captain, I believe yesterday or the day before yesterday, that we were going to cover this. This is from the Huffington Post once again. I thought it was interesting about the notion of disfigurement. There's an issue, a piece from the science portion of the Huffington Post that says facial disfigurement, revulsion people feel tied to fear of contagion. Let me repeat that again. Facial disfigurement, revulsion people feel tied to fear of contagion. So, you know, when you go into this, it makes me think of other things besides just the notion of someone being physically disfigured. But I do think it's interesting that they went more deeply into the notion. They studied this. Because why is it when you see someone, I mean, on occasion, even in the gym or when you're out in public, Captain, you may see someone through some, it could be birth, you know, some unfortunate, really unfortunate circumstance, accident. I mean, we have to be thankful that, you know, if you have all of your fingers and toes and that kind of thing, and you're able to go through life without any severe injury, you're lucky. So at some point, someone may not have been lucky. Could have been in a car accident, could have been in a fire, what have you. Anyway, the article unpacks this notion that, you know, it's very natural for someone to recoil in seeing someone, another human being, that has been disfigured. And it says, well, actually, they go deeper into recoiling. It's more of a disgust. I'm not comfortable with that description. That's what they're saying. Let me read this briefly so our audience get a better understanding of exactly what this article is saying. It says, psychologists have recently begun to uncover where disgust comes from, with some researchers believing that the emotion is similar to fear. Fear evolved to keep you away from large animals that want to eat you from the outside, says Valerie Curtis, a behavioral scientist at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, who wasn't involved in the study. Disgust evolved to keep you away from smaller animals that kill you from the inside. Our subconscious minds constantly scan the environment for signs of potential diseases, she says. If we see one, disgust kicks in and we avoid the object or person like the plague. But it seems our disease avoidance system sometimes gets it wrong. Previous studies suggested that these mistakes underlie the aversion people have to various disfigurements. For this to be true, our responses to people with facial disfigurements, which aren't contagious, would have to be the same as our responses to people with infectious disease. Captain, what are your thoughts on this? Where they're going into, being shunning someone who has an unfortunate accident, who is figuratively, from their disfigured. Why can't I speak? They're disfigured, facially disfigured, and you would think you would try to cover that up. Let's put it that way. If that you would try to say, okay, I'm not going to go show this person that I am disgusted with them.
Well,
it seems to be giving an excuse. It seems to be making an excuse for it.
Well, I can remember reading the article 2001 saying that human beings naturally look for the equilibrium in each other. And the more equilibrium that there is in a face and your body structure, the more beautiful you are. We are drawn to equilibrium. And the less equilibrium that there is within the person, the more appalling that person becomes. So when it's off, you're totally repelled. So this seems to be, to me, along the same line as that at this given time. So it's just something naturally that we look for, that, human beings look for. High equilibrium, you're drawn. Low equilibrium, you're repelled. And if you're disfigured, you more or less would figure that the equilibrium is totally off. So it's something you're going to be like, oh, my God, look at that. So you're just going to back up from. Is this something that we naturally do? And that was an article I read in 2001. So this article here is just more or less along the lines as far as that is concerned, in my opinion. Back over to you, Sir Aphemeric.
Yeah, at least I try. I've brought up this word before, Captain, the term primitive or primitivism, trying to fight that. We're supposed to be higher life forms, and as time goes on, we're supposed to. I'm talking about more along the lines of humanity, the human species, that we're supposed to be evolving. That if you evolve, your rational mind tells you that this person doesn't want to look that way. It cannot be helped, and we should be beyond what someone looks like, especially when it comes down to something that could not be helped. We're not talking about self-mutilation, which might be another issue. Like if you mutilate yourself, that seems to be – that might be more of an object for disgust in some way. There's at least a little bit of a rationale for that. That someone – if someone puts a whole bunch of piercings in his forehead, his or her forehead, or all kinds of weirdness where someone purposely disfigures themselves, that might be one – side of the spectrum. The other side is if it's through disease or accident or birth, we should be bigger than that as human beings to look beyond that. And at the same time, I remember when Oprah Winfrey, and she was cool as a cucumber. She was cool as a cucumber when she interviewed the woman that was disfigured by the chimpanzee a few years ago. And it's a rough road to look at this woman. It was rough. She was, she was professional. She acted as if she wasn't disfigured. She treated her like a human being. That's higher order thinking. And I think that we should at least try to look toward doing that, that we should try to be higher order thinking people. A lot of what I say on AfroNer, what we both talk about, is really trying to get people to look at things from a different perspective, open up their mind, look at things from different angles. And when I saw this, because this could also be, you have people that have issues with looking at people of color. White folks who may, many, if you look at old footage of people, one can make the argument that someone is different, that someone could recoil. Well, what is the difference between, they're saying, this has a lot to do with having a fear of the other. Well, what's to make, we know this to be, they're making this to be somewhat plausible. But we don't accept that as being plausible when it comes to race. It's a slippery slope. What are your thoughts about that? What's the phraseology of this, Captain? I was thinking, people feel uncomfortable with people with darker skin. Some may deem someone with darker skin not necessarily to be disfigured, but it makes them feel uncomfortable. It gives them an uncomfortable feeling that might be akin to someone who might be disfigured. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I definitely feel that we should have higher form of thinking in a situation like that, but it takes a certain level of evolvement. You have to evolve from the standpoint. The first reaction with anything, this is the article says, is a way of protection. Okay, Oprah Winfrey essentially did what she had to do because she could not be on a show bringing this woman on going, oh, I can't look at her. How would Oprah look? That would affect her down the line. You know, millions of viewers would change their opinion about Oprah. Oprah has to be very liberal. We don't know what Oprah was going on in Oprah's mind. Now, the casual person walking down the street has a different perspective seeing this person. They don't have to do what Oprah does. They don't have to answer to millions of people. So we really don't know how involved Oprah really is pertaining to this exact situation. Oprah could have more or less just did what she had to do, what was necessary, given the situation. But I do wholeheartedly agree that, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to turn around and say, okay, naturally this person does not want to look like this. Let me give them a break, okay? And let me conduct myself properly. That's what we're supposed to do. But the casual person walking down the street is not going to do that. They're going to go, oh, my God, there you go. They're not used to seeing it. And anything that human beings, if you notice, they're not used to. Okay? They're fearful of. That's the way humans automatically operate. They're fearful of. They're not used to it. They haven't seen it. If a person walks down the street and they're 15 feet tall, you might be the most peaceful person. What is everyone going to do? They're going to run. They're going to stop, stand, they're going to back up, and they're going to run. You could be the most peaceful person on the planet. You're going to say, oh, my God, this person is 15 feet tall, and they weigh about 3,000 pounds. I got to run. That's what you're going to do. And then after a while, you get used to it. You say, you know what? There's people here that's 15 feet tall, and they weigh 3,000 pounds. They're all right. They're nonviolent. We're more violent than they are. You know, and that's the way we progress, and that's the reality of it. Back over to you, sir, afternoon.
Yeah, I want to do a quick turnaround on another topic, but I just thought of anything or anyone that is different, there seems to be this place where people are allowed to I wouldn't use the term allowed, but they go ahead and do it anyway. They shun people. We shun people for all types of reasons. Little people, a person who is diminutive, we can shun someone who's a small person. I've seen that. Disfigured. If you are of a different ethnicity, you can see yourself being shunned. So the disfigured part is interesting in the sense that it can unpack a larger issue with just difference. But they seem to have an excuse for it, or rationale, I should say, for this. All right, folks. Again, you're listening to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. The time is 7:49 p.m. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Transition time. I want to talk about Governor Romney. He's overseas, and I'm not so sure. I guess it depends on your perception of the press, of the media. I'm not so sure that he's ready for his close-up, Captain. I'm hearing a lot of flubs, either by the gentleman himself or by his campaign staff, that there are a whole bunch of gaffes and just malapropisms. I mean, just things that are going on that seem to be very suspect for someone who is seeking the highest office in the land. So I want to play this quick clip on Romney, specifically in Israel. But he also said some things that caused some our friends over across the pond in England, some folks over there that took issue and umbrage with him, that he said some things that are a little quote-unquote out of pocket. So this is from PBS News, Romney in Israel. Hold on, folks. Let's listen up. Hold on.
And we turn to the presidential election, which over the past several days has had its focus shifted by events abroad.
Hello. Hi. Hi there.
Mitt Romney arrived in Poland today for the third leg of a trip aimed at burnishing his foreign policy credentials. On the agenda, a meeting with Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk. He also sat down with former President Lech Walesa. But much of the focus remained on Romney's weekend visit to Israel. On Sunday, he endorsed the Israeli government's view that Iran must not be allowed to go nuclear.
We should employ any and all measures to dissuade the Iranian regime from its nuclear course. And it is our fervent hope that diplomatic and economic measures will do so. In the final analysis, of course, no option should be excluded. We recognize Israel's right to defend itself and that it is right for America to stand with you.
Today, Romney caused a stir when he noted Israel is far ahead of the Palestinians economically. He cited a similar disparity between the U.S. and Mexico and said, culture makes all the difference. The Palestinians denounced the remark as racist. Saeb Erekat is a senior aide to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas.
Palestinians and Israelis may be in a conflict, but Palestinians and Israelis are people, equal. And such racist statements does not serve those who are trying to protect and save lives in this region. Those who are trying to maintain democracy, transparency, human rights, women's rights are not served by such statements.
Later, a Romney aide rejected the criticism. She said his comments were grossly mischaracterized. The Palestinians also complained about Romney's statement Sunday that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. The Palestinians claim East Jerusalem as their capital. In Washington today, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the issue should be left to final status negotiations.
I'd remind you that that's the position that's been held by previous administrations, both Democratic and Republican. If Mr. Romney disagrees with that position, he's also disagreeing with the position that was taken by presidents like Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan.
During his Middle East visit, Romney did speak with Salam Fayyad, the Palestinian prime minister, but not with President Abbas. And he conferred with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The two have been friends since working together as business consultants in the 1970s. The 36-hour stop in Israel was designed to help Romney broaden his support with Jewish American voters. A Gallup poll released last month found President Obama leading 64-29% in that part of the electorate. That was down from Mr. Obama's 78-21% advantage over John McCain in the 2008 election.
I think we got to really shuffle a little bit.
The slide in the president's Jewish support surfaced during a recent reporting trip by the NewsHour to South Florida.
Well, I thought he'd be good for the people, especially the elder people. I thought he'd be terrific for Medicare. And I thought he'd visit Israel, but he hasn't in the years that he's been in the office. That bothered me.
Romney's effort to boost his standing with Jewish voters will be helped by outside groups. One, called the Emergency Committee for Israel, has been paying for TV ads criticizing the president.
He's traveled all over the Middle East. Yet he hasn't found time to visit our ally and friend, Israel.
And billionaire casino magnate Sheldon Adelson, who toured Israel with Romney, is part of the Republican Jewish Coalition that has committed $6.5 million for its own ad campaign.
All right, folks, we're back. That was PBS reporting on Romney's visit overseas, specifically with the Middle East and Israel. And it appears that on every country he has visited, he has said something that is akin to having foot and mouth disease. And, you know, when you look at these issues fairly, which the media, our media is so fractured, I think it's difficult to look at it fairly, but I'm trying to look at this thing fairly. And the folks that are listening know that I consider myself a conservative. I am a registered Republican, but I'm able to see things clearly. And I still support President Barack Obama, although I'm not 100% about progressive politics. Some of the things, I don't necessarily agree with everything that he puts forward. However, I think considering what he inherited and the amount of time that he has had to correct these matters, or rather how people are positioning him to correct these things, are in a wholesale sense, unfair, patently unfair. For someone to walk into a collapsed economy while campaigning, our financial institutions in the U.S. were collapsing. I'm confused on how quickly these things are supposed to turn around. Real estate, banking, the auto industry, employment, two wars. I mean, I can go on and on. No one in his right mind would have wanted to inherit what he inherited. When you think of what FDR inherited in the 30s and in the 40s, he was allowed four terms, ladies and gentlemen, four terms. Now they only have it legally, you can only run twice. But at that point, he was allowed, and he won four times. So why is he given four terms, and in this instance, we're looking at about 3.5 years for correction? Just logically, just to the audience, does that make any sense? So I have my issue with on the right side with a lot of hyperbole. I mean, both left and right, they toil in hyperbole, but the conservatives, the Republicans, if you listen to Fox News or any of the right-wing radio, they are so much into hyperbole. You're not really getting any real facts. So when you go to Romney is in Israel. He's doing what many politicians do, and I've said that Barack Obama does it, but he seems to do it with a lot more finesse. I have to give credit where credit is due. He's able to do it with a lot more finesse without really stepping on toes. Not really. In the case of Romney, he's in London. Someone from his staff had said something about, his ability to relate to Anglo-Saxon culture. You know what that means? I mean, let me translate. Our man is white. You guys are white. Hey, we can relate. We can relate. That's essentially what that means. That's essentially what it means. And someone from his staff said that, trying to make inroads, not really much of a sophisticated argument, not sophisticated at all, to say, well, he has Anglo-Saxon roots. You're Anglo-Saxon. Let's get at it. That's not good enough. That is not good enough. And that was deemed to be racist. Now he goes to Israel and pandering to those of the Jewish faith, to the Israelis, he says that culturally, you guys, that's what he says, interpreting it now, I'm paraphrasing, you are culturally more sound, and therefore, your culture dictates your success. And he also shouts out that you are truly the chosen people. Now, people love to be pandered. They love to be pandered. That's why you see so many successful politicians. They know how to kiss up. But when you're on the world stage, that is not the time. You're not really campaigning over there. You're really over there to give them your close-up, or to give a close-up as to what you would be on the world stage, as to what you are as a world leader. Yes, it's kind of sort of campaigning, but it's also much larger than that. It's more about, do you have the prowess, my favorite word, comportment? Do you have the comportment? Do you have the wherewithal to be an international leader? And to make slick, small-minded statements like that, I don't think he's ready for his close-up. And it makes me very concerned that the voting public, if we're led to believe what's going on out there, that we're so divided in this country, that we're so divided politically, that we're more we're more anxious to get rid of Obama, to get rid of President Obama, and just put anyone in his place, and anyone white, let's put it that way. I hope we have, talking about evolution, Captain, I hope we are more evolved than that, but we're getting back into whether it's Chick-fil-A or certain churches that are not allowing black folks to get married as if it's 1940. I don't think I think there's a level of ignorance that maybe he's playing to, but I don't think he's ready to be a world-class leader, not from what I've been seeing. Foot-and-mouth disease, foot-and-mouth disorder. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say, NSA people, listen up. I have to give you the prerequisite before I get started into what I really want to say. First of all, when it comes to the policies of Iran, Iran has not invaded a sovereign country within 300 years. Now, maybe Iran might be able to put together one or two or three nukes, while Israel has 100. The United States has a whole bunch of nukes, so does Russia, Pakistan, India, you know, and China also. They have a few nukes. The problem with Iran is not, listen up, NSA, if you're listening, it's not nuclear weapons, it's Cobalt 60. An attack on Iran leads, they turn people into martyrs, and they spread Cobalt 60 all over Israel. The members of Israel, they get radioactive, and they have to be flown here to New York City to get worked on. And the rest of the American public can't go into the hospital because you have to take care of the Israelis first. Okay? So listen up, NSA, if you're listening. Okay? Now, Romney's policies, which are not really as polished in his verbiage, okay, as Obama, was pretty much the same on Iran. I repeat that. Okay? Romney's policies on Iran are pretty much the same as Mr. Obama, all right? But he's not as polished. Obama's a lot more polished in his verbiage, just like President Clinton was very polished in his verbiage, okay? Romney, you lack polish. And as a president, you need to have polish. You understand? You know what polish is? You have a pair of dirty black shoes, you know, and you beat it up a little bit. Same pair of shoes. But you put on the polish, it looks a lot newer. You're more accepting. You understand? To make it real simple. So, Mr. Romney, your policies are the same when you're talking about Iran. But you lack polish. You need to go out and get some polish. You understand? If you want to be president. Now, to expound upon this further, if the American people want change, you can't have change as long as Congress does not print money. So regardless of whatever president you put into office, it's supposed to be the same result. See, the bankers are very smart in what they do. They're smart. All right? So whether it's Romney or it's Obama, at the end of the day, the end result is going to be the same for you, American person. You are going to get poorer. Now, that being said, I think more than likely Obama is going to win this presidency. Now, everything that you see in the media is a bunch of misdirection, in my opinion. It's only an opinion at the end of the day. We'll see when the race goes down. But in my opinion, Obama is going to win the presidency. Now, maybe Romney does get in there. But if Romney does get in there, it's the same result, friends. It's the same result. But back to my opinion, I think Obama is going to win the presidency. Okay? This man here is somewhat savage, you know, borderline. You know, he doesn't have polish. We like people with some polish in that Oval Office. You understand? Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Yeah. I see we have a visitor in the chat room. His name is I Am the Universe, and he's saying some things that he says, and he's making some pretty provocative statements. He's saying Mormonism was created by Luciferian Zionists. Then he says Romney is the white Obama. Obama is the black G.W. Bush. Zionist propagandizing media. I'm not in wholesale agreement with what this person is saying, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I might have mentioned this before last time we were airing, Captain, that I've been listening to KRS-One, rap artist KRS-One, classic rap artist KRS-One, and I don't always agree with KRS-One because he's not really consistent. You know, he has this whole professor of hip-hop thing. He's been able to hustle, and I've made overtures to have him on the show as well. And I think he has even admitted that sometimes he's just not that consistent. I don't know just how well read he is. I'm not even going to get into the formally educated thing. I'm not even going to get into that because I do make room for those who are extremely well-read. But he does say some things, I admit, as of late, he has said some things that I have to agree with. I see that I Am the Universe says KRS-One is down with the Boulay. I don't think so. I don't think so. This is where we get into conspiratorial thinking that I don't think so. I've heard that's ridiculous. And Boulé is a upper tier black organization. So what? So what's wrong with the Boulé? Anyway, that's another. We'll have to get into that at another topic. But some kind of the Boulé, some clandestine black organization, when essentially it's a middle class black organization. There's a number of them. Anyway. My thoughts on KRS-One, what he's been saying. He has been saying, and we've hinted at this, that it's the system is what it is. It's a corporatized system, and it goes beyond who is the titular head of the country. It goes beyond that. The fix is in. I mean, we should know this. The fix is in. There's only so much change that a president will be allowed to make in the grand scheme of things. If you were to make some real big scheme or some real big changes, you know, we talked about hope and change, but if it was really going to be real change, he would get the JFK pink slip. And folks know what I'm talking about. You would get the JFK pink slip if you really wanted to implement change. So he's only allowed to do what he can do within the parameters that he's been given. And I think I Am the Universe for him to say Romney is the white Obama, Obama is the black G.W. Bush, yeah, it's a little too simplistic for me. I think it's a little bit too simplistic for me. And as I said before, no one can answer how much change, if we're even to expect some modicum of change, if we're even to expect a modicum of change, Captain, are we to expect it in 3 years? That's what I want to know. Is that realistic? We gave George Bush 2 terms, and we're giving this young man 1. And he inherited the George Bush's policies. He inherited them. He inherited 2 wars and a failing economy. So he's supposed to wave his magic black hand. He's been called the Magic Negro. You know what that's about. He's been called that. So I guess we're supposed to believe that for real. And all these problems, these harrowing problems, they're supposed to disappear, oh, I don't know, in 6 months. I remember when Miss Knucklehead herself, Sarah Palin, who was severely undereducated, not very much a knowledgeable person, she says to him, and the public eats this up, you know, how's that hopey changey thing going? How's that hopey changey thing going? She does this 6 months into his administration. You can't treat this stuff real. I mean, is that real? But it was reported. No one really got into her about it. This man can talk about. I'm talking about Governor Romney. Matter of fact, I mean, he's not even releasing his tax records. His father, George Romney, released his tax records. He's not even doing what his father did. But, we're, you know, listen, even conservatives 30, 40, 50 years ago are different than the conservatives now. They would consider Nixon a liberal. I think they would. I'm on the verge of thinking they would think Reagan was a liberal. But they hold up Reagan as the quintessential conservative. But the conservatism that I espouse, the conservatism that I've read and the conservatism, the boilerplate conservatism that I'm aware of, I don't think what we're seeing with the stalemate in Congress, I don't think that is the that's not your father's conservatism. And also to I in the universe, he seemed to poo-poo on 4 years, I'm sorry, on four terms of the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt's, our 32nd president. His 4 terms, he seems to poo-poo on that. I don't know about that. The New Deal that he implemented, many of the things that we take for granted now are because of the New Deal, because of those policies. And I don't recollect him getting the socialist thing, not so wholeheartedly. I don't think, and that's all, that was all socialism, Captain, by the way, if you want to be technical about it, Social Security and that kind of thing. That's all socialism. But I don't think he was given that pejorative. All right, listen, Captain, I think we should go to a musical break. When we get back, more discussion. As always, this is, you know what, I want to go back to, okay, let's go to Urban Alternative. This is Moonday School by The Satisfaction. We'll be back in a few moments.
Church, rejoice your voice. Pro-choice, give thanks to the bank
and the car.
Invoice, get paid, just tithe in your offering. Here's what I'm offering, good noise. Intergalactic church, it's a nebula. Where the Martian choir's incredible.
Where the Martian choir's incredible.
Sunday and Moonday school.
In fact, we're running out of room.
Passive astronomer gives us schools at the
Intergalactic Church. Intergalactic Church.
Hey, mommy, look at the monster. I think she's a gangster. With her dark black skin and her black hair. I'm the reason you fear. I'm the reason you're scared. I'm the reason you're here. You're the reason that nobody else cares. An issue to beat it first. At the
Intergalactic Church. Intergalactic Church. Intergalactic Church.
Okay, we're back. Listening to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a Afternoon Radio. The time is 8:14 p.m. We got about 15 minutes or such remaining. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. A quick correction on something. You know, when I mentioned that FDR did not get the same level of vitriol regarding his New Deal programs, he did. And actually, the irony is that, you know, FDR was a Democrat, and he was getting a lot of opposition from conservative Democrats. His own were labeling him being in line with Lenin and socialism. So he did get it. He did get the vitriol, some of it, but he was able to combat it by stating that those very people that were critiquing him for socialism, he was able to essentially prove that they had corporate business interests. Let's stop. You know, history repeats itself. History repeats itself. It's just that I think that the socialism thing is really it was said to Obama from day one. You know, it was said to him from day one. They could not, I'm just my opinion, Captain, they could not call him the N-word directly. And I think by calling him a socialist and a radical and that kind of thing, it's easier to throw that at him than to be direct about the racial thing. That's my own personal opinion. But FDR did get some barbs for socialist thinking, but then he was able to fight it, and it quickly went away. It went away when he was able to dispel based on who was throwing those barbs at him. I don't think that President Obama is getting the same. He's not getting the same love, Captain. He's not. All right, folks. More tops to get into. Actually, I want to talk about this. This is going to be a brief one because this is pretty much self-explanatory, I think. There's a story, and we've heard this story a number of times, that just more and more people are getting into trouble with their clothing. Young man on a flight was removed from the flight, somewhat belligerent, somewhat verbally abusive. At least that's what's being reported. He refused to pull up his pants. He was wearing saggy pants during a flight. The hostess comes over and says, "Listen, you know, you're gonna have to pull your pants up, or you know, we're not really allowing that." I believe it was Spirit Airlines. He's booted off because of excessively low, saggy pants. I'm pretty sure our audience knows what I'm going to say. They almost know line for line because I just don't like the look. I really don't. I think it should have seen its day. Saggy pants on some level. We're likening saggy pants to a woman's burqa. It's the black man's burqa. Because I've been told on a number of occasions that it's a cultural thing. I can wear my pants low because it's cultural. And we've been seeing this culture flourish for almost two decades now. It's not the kind of thing that you would normally see. I've seen a great deal of hip-hop fashion come and go, Kat. I know you have too. There's hip-hop fashion that dates back to the early 80s. It came and it went. This one just will not go away. Even when the style now is to wear not so baggy pants, but more insanely tight-fitting pants, now the thing is to go in reverse to wear really tight pants. But even the tight pants must sag. Even the tight pants must sag. What are your thoughts on this airline flight, this Spirit Airlines booting them off? Is it maybe they're wrong? You can dress however you want to dress. I don't know.
Well, you know, going way back, I had to do the prerequisite. Now you have to take the prerequisite course, the precursor to this. We used to have a style many years ago. I think it started around 78, maybe 77, where we used to go one leg up, all right? You cuffed the one pants leg and have your other one down. But you couldn't do it in front of your house where your parents could see or on your block. So you had to be a couple of blocks away. And then, you know, just to look cool or what have you, look a little savvy. You would do this, and then when you got on your block, you straighten up your pants. There was a straightening up. That was always the modus operandi. That's how it went. And then you see LL Cool J came along a little bit later on, and then he started doing this style a little up until like maybe about 88, 89. Then it disappeared. You know, at that same time, that pants sagging off your behind business started happening, which actually came out of the prison system, you understand, along with the do-rag, the stocking cap, and a few other things that came out of the prison system, you understand? So that's the precursor to it, all right? But the point is, with the one up, one down, you knew where to do it. You weren't going to do it going to a job. You weren't going to do it where your parents could see. It was among your little group, and then that was it. When the adult came around, you rolled it down because you knew it was not proper. You had a proper way of dressing. Okay, the problem with this pants sagging, if it was just you're doing it for a little while, you're going out here, no. You know, that's not what you're doing. You're doing this as your permanent style of dress. When you step in a corporate setting, you're supposed to dress a certain way. When you go on a plane, okay, you're supposed to be, yes, relaxed, but you don't necessarily supposed to have your ass hanging out. And that's what this style is. You're showing your underwear, or sometimes you're showing the crack of your behind. So, you know, just like stepping into, like, let's say certain clubs or anything else, you might see a sign. We have the right to be selective, meaning which if you're not dressed properly, they might not let you in. So with this style here, no one has to accept you with that type of dress. You understand? No one has to accept you. If the airline more or less feels, they could write something up, say, listen, your pants are not all the way up. We don't have to let you on the plane. It's an opinion at this given point. I don't like the style at all. You understand? Because you don't know when to do it, when not to do it. I know young people always have a trend. They have a way of doing things. All right? I had a way of doing things. Generation before us had a way of doing things. But we put it in proper context. The problem now is you want to make this lower tier type of behavior. And I have to use the term lower tier. I'm sorry whoever does not like it, because it comes out of the prison system. And most people will agree prison is a lower tier situation. You understand? You're adopting lower tier culture, trying to make it mainstream, which lowers everything else with it. It begins to lower everything else that comes with it. You understand? It lowers your thinking. It lowers your education. It lowers everything that comes with it. Lowers the way you talk, which a lot of people would say is a form of education. It's lower tier. It's lower tier. It's lower tier, and I do not like it in no way, shape, or form. Back over to you, Sir Afflinger.
Yeah, let me just back up for a second, Captain. I see I am the universe once again. He's saying some things about earrings and tattoos, which I might be in agreement with. I think he's on target, but I'm going back to this thing with the New Deal, where he says that the New Deal was a terrible sellout. Knock it off, I am the universe. I'm saying that jokingly, but knock it off. You're not going to give back your Social Security check when you become 62 or 65 years of age. You're not going to do that. The New Deal expanded unions, expanded federal insurance. Matter of fact, because of the collapse of the stock market, you have the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, because of the New Deal. So when people complain about this, even the Republicans who complain about this, they're not going to give back their Social Security checks when these guys get older. They're not. So some of the things that have happened because of the New Deal were necessary. So that's not my – hey, I don't even think that's opinion. That's not something you can really refute. And I have yet to see someone, poor or wealthy, who has worked most of their lives, reject their Social Security check. You're not going to do it. Enough. All right. Sorry about that, Captain. As far as the saggy pants thing, I already said that in the beginning, that we have – and I mean being tribal, it's not just minority communities. I mean, it is something that's been we've been seeing with other cultures wearing. I mean, it's American culture in a way with pants sagging, but black folks have been stigmatized because of it, and we're trying to make it okay. And as you just stated, it's a lower grade cultural thing. It comes from the prisons. And it's a form of exposure, just as you wouldn't want to see a woman, you know, a woman would probably be pulled to the side if she was wearing something that was sexually suggestive. They're going to tell you, you're going to have to cover that up, miss. You're going to have to do something. And this, you know, this young man, your pants are so low, you're showing your underwear. I mean, that goes beyond fashion. It's not fashionable. It's not fashionable, and it's a tired look, Captain. You know, my thing is, when does it stop being played out, which was a hip-hop word, hip-hop terminology years ago. Some things used to be played out. Why isn't it? Why, I'm asking you this, actually. Why are we on to the next thing? Why isn't this a played-out fashion style?
Well, it seems like there's something going on. The meme has been passed around that you have to just overall generally lower the culture. And the lower the lower the standard is, the more it just seems to hang around. You know? You have to look at all of these styles that typically the youth is adopting. Where are they coming from? Now, let's talk about it. Where is it coming from? It's not top down. It's going bottom up, right? Look where it's coming from.
You know something? You may have a point. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Captain.
Look, you know, when we had no laces, which was a short period of time, what do they do when you're in prison? They take your laces from you. All right? This is prison also, the lower pant, the do-rag, the stocking cap. You understand? Everything is prison. Everything is prison. You know, tattoos. What do you do in prison? Come on now. You have a long bid. You get a bunch of tattoos. Let's talk. Back over to you, Sir Afflinger.
Yeah, you know, speaking to the Oracle about this, and you are hinting at something about this need to change things around. I mean, you know, we spoke about this actually, I think the last show, maybe two shows ago, about this need to rebel with no end game. But it's also coupled with a sense of, as you said, lowering the standard, and everything has to be of a lowly character. If you wear a baseball hat, it has to be oversized. It can't fit on your head properly. It has to be turned to the side. If you're wearing your pants, you just can't wear your pants normally. It's like at every turn, things cannot be done in a normal fashion. It has to be. You know, instead of neighborhood, it's the hood. You see what I mean? Everything has a lowliness to it. Well, hey, lower tier. All right, folks, we're about to close the shop. We have a guest coming through this Sunday. Actually, I must thank Afro Brit, our friend from the United Kingdom, Afro Brit. She sent an email and gave me a suggestion to get this person to come through. Norman Kelly, author, journalist, wrote a book on R&B, the business of R&B, and actually a number of books. So we're going to talk to him about a couple of things. But he's an interesting person. I was also a segment producer for WBAI Pacifica Radio, so we're very fortunate to have him come through. So for the 7 o'clock show, again, it's the double show, the Comic Shop at 6 p.m. and After the Radio at 7 p.m. But this gentleman, again, Norman Kelly, is coming through this Sunday, so definitely check that out. We appreciate you coming through and your support. And we're working on other folks, too. I mean, hopefully we'll get T.J. Holmes. MC Light, she's still in the mix. You know, she called me personally. Carries a lot of weight. So when she comes on, she just comes on, and we'll speak to this iconic rapper. All right, folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll do it again this Sunday. Norman Kelly's coming through. We appreciate the support. This is Skin I'm In by Cameo, a classic R&B joint.
creed by which I live. But then sometimes I wonder just how much a man can give.
Gross injustices around me from the highest level. And you think these are the people I depend on for my survival?
Is this for real? Or am I seeing shadows in the dark? I'll let you tell me. Tell me. Can you tell me, brother? Tell me.
People are just out to see basic respect and humanity. I'm just trying to be realistic without becoming best on me. If we have hope, we can survive.
A damn good reason to stay alive.
Is it immoral or a sin? It seems to be a calling to the sin I am in. It is according to the scenario.